Welcome back to Dime Comic Bros Podcast. All three of us are here together on this brand new season.
On this blessed day.
We have had a hellish week and we all want to die more so than we usually do.
That's actually very true.
But it means that we're all on the same wavelength.
And so we have gathered here today to talk about Sin City, written and,
Yes.
Arted, I guess.
Illustrated was the word I was looking for. Illustrated by Frank Miller.
The first volume,
Blessed is he who shits as he walks.
Shut up. The Hard Goodbye. It's the first of seven. I did research.
Yep.
Seven total volumes, all done by Frank Miller. I thought the series might have still been ongoing. It's not. I'm insane. It was about, I think, 10 years worth of work.
Yeah. It's been collected for quite
times.
A while.
Yeah.
And it's like
this is the only book, right?
No. There's six more of those.
Yeah.
How? Does it just still take place in Sin City with
different
characters?
Yeah, it's about the setting.
Different
it's
characters,
not,
yeah.
There's some crossover. I think I've read the first three?
I read the first two.
The first two are the most acclaimed ones. And then
yeah.
I think it's... just judging by what I was flicking through, it still seems like most of them are fairly well-received. But yeah, I think the last one was published in like 2001 or something.
I can really only see this book being well like reclaimed is because of the art. You know, regardless of what's going on, even though Frank Miller has this like really shitty... points when he's arting, it's really good, like the almost Germanic expressionism with the black on white, just the how do I explain it?
Can you give
I have a question.
Give your autism summary of the story.
Okay, so let me pull it up.
I had a question about the artwork.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
Because now, of course, I can't find it. There's a shot where there's a brick wall and the bricks are black. Yeah, this. The bricks are black, but the mortar is white.
Mm-hmm.
And then later when there's a couple of women standing around the dude and they've got, like, dresses on that are, like, wrinkled, the wrinkles are white, but the main body of the dresses are black. Do you think... he drew it the other way around and then inverted the colors somehow?
No.
Like, the brick wall especially, the squares of the bricks are very symmetrical.
It just looks sussy.
He just did it.
Nah, I think he just did it. So
he did it.
The coolest part of the art for me, my driving point, is it feels like you have shadow, and then there's, like, one harsh down or up light, and
mm-hmm.
then everything gets pushed into frame. And that's how all the highlighting happens. And it's a really cool fucking look. And when we get to talk about the movie, that's basically what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, the look of this book is, like...
all
close to top tier.
Yeah.
I would... Sadly to say, because it's Frank Miller. But, like, it is close to top tier. And it's great.
Despite the fact that he draws some weird-ass shit, even in this book, there's plenty of panels. You're like, what is that? Like,
yeah.
I hate how he draws broken glass.
That
pisses me off.
It's very effective, whereas there's lots of stuff where, like, the composition does not make sense, like, realistically, but, like, it gets the point across very well.
So what pissed me off, besides broken glass looking, like, not making sense, is when he drew Kevin's face, it did not fit the art style at all. It's like he was using a different art style. That wasn't
I kind of see what you're saying there. It was framed very differently.
Like, so, whole body characters are rough, too. It really... like, dudes are just big walking bricks, and then chicks are
just
kind of squared off.
They're just tits.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
vases.
It's really weird, and it brings me back to Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Ooh.
Like, those character models for a lot of the women characters. It's really rough.
It is definitely...
well, What I feel like is kind of...
it adds to the subjection, or the objectifying of women?
Yeah, it adds,
feeling.
Obviously,
I love objectifying
it obviously
women.
Adds to the objectification of women.
I love women.
But I feel like in this setting, it kind of... It definitely makes sense for, like, the hookers.
Oh, no,
the way
no,
they
for
do.
Sure. This is
okay,
the...
so when we look at his parole officer, who's hot, why is she that hot? Like, that's the only one that really bothered me with, like, why are you so much like a vase? You should be, like, a little bit more, like, square. I feel like she should be a little bit more square.
So I think the thing with that, this is a very subjective thing, but, you know, it brings up the natural part of, you know, slurs in this book. But, like, she's described as being a dyke, which is part of Marv's view of her, is very forbidden fruit. I can't go near that because she, you know,
and
there's
mentioned
no interest.
A couple of times.
Multiple times. And the way it's said, you know, like you used to say dyke, it's an insult at the same time.
Yes.
So it's definitely, there's like a, his schizophrenic mind and the really weird subjective view of the people in this book is really coming into play there, I think.
It's really
I think that's easy to
overlook Frank Miller's worldview because he just blatantly puts it as this character's point of view.
Yes. This book, I think, is the best distillation of that, especially because this was during... Right before Frank Miller, this was, like, during his peak era, was, like, the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And it was before he hit his really bad early 2000s 9/11 downward spiral.
Founder brain?
I think it's a really good excuse to use to say that, like, it's the expression of his, our little cuckboy's schizophrenia. And also, it's a great excuse for Frank Miller to just make his characters say what they want,
yes.
say what he wants, by making them just, they're the only dialogue
that
you really
get.
That's
what I was saying.
Right.
That was my
point. No, I know, and I'm elaborating
on
that, because I'm saying it's a great fucking excuse.
It is.
Because obviously him drawing his parole officer as hot was just because Frank wants hot women in the book, not because of any... Oh, it's actually schizophrenia, forbidden fruit, and those are all cool ideas,
but
they make sense,
but
that's
Frank,
not what happens.
No, but it's Frank Miller, he's not that deep.
Yeah.
And he typically doesn't pretend to be, which I appreciate, and that's the thing with this book, is it feels very honest, and it feels like there is a level of self-awareness. It's not him going, all these things that I clearly have as opinions are bad, but it is him going, like, some of this definitely isn't right. Like, the setting is described mostly as, like, so the bad guys are the worst people on the planet, and the good guys, in quotations, for these stories are, like, still shitty people. Like,
oh, yeah.
So Marv, being a really clear Frank Miller self-insert, is, like, he's still a mess and a bad person. He just has some decent traits here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely feels like he's aware of the fact that those tendencies he has are bad. It's just a matter of actually putting it in a setting where it's useful for it to be self-critical. Not because it has an answer to it, but just because it's actually, like, engaging with those sorts of biases. What's the story about, Colin?
I was about to get there. I was waiting for you to shut up.
Shut up!
Okay, so my synopsis is art is pretty close to top tier, and the story would be terminally online schizophrenic virgin Redditor with a gun trying to get his favorite OnlyFans girl to shout him out.
I think you're right on the money with that one.
That I immediately closed the book. And I wrote this to you guys. I'm like, this is exactly what it is. Because it's just him. So we follow this maybe ex-military, big fucking brick, wannabe Punisher guy. Can't get women because he's too ugly. Finds this woman named Goldie, she sought him out. They have sex once and he's like falling in love with her because he's probably a virgin. And then he wakes up and she's dead. And I was like, what the fuck is that? So he goes on this whole rampage and trying to figure out who killed her.
And he says later, like, I'm too ugly and no woman wants me. And it's like, it's really hard to tell if that's in his brain or if that's the truth. Like,
yeah. But also, to be fair, later...
He's drawn really fucking ugly.
Yeah.
He is. But also later in the book, there are so many of the... Okay, frankly. So, like, later in the book, he just assaults a woman because he's confused and hasn't taken his pills, which is displayed very honestly, and it's, like, it's just, it's not, I wouldn't say brushed past, it's a clear, this guy's not okay, and he's not alright, and everyone around him
Wendy,
is aware of that.
Because he thinks Wendy's Goldie.
Because they're identical twins.
Yes.
And, like, she is clearly aware of it, and isn't, like, she pushes back and is like, fuck off, you know, go to bed.
Yeah, she just says... She just, like, slaps him, and then he's like, I'm sorry, I get confused sometimes. And she's like, it's okay, Marv, go to sleep.
It doesn't, whilst it's very, I would have liked a little bit more in, like, that area. It doesn't feel like it's being used as an excuse, at least for me, the way I'm reading it, is it feels very,
That feels real to me.
Yes, it feels village idiot type thing. Yeah. Whereas, like, say, a few hundred years ago, we did not treat people who were mentally ill or just different or, like, what we would now think of, like, as on the spectrum. Just people with different brains. We did not treat them well whatsoever. We, like, murdered them and put them in institutions, which were to murder them. But sometimes there's these probably a little romanticized ideas of, like, you know, in, you know, like, colonial times, there'd be, like, the village idiot. Like, they're not competent. They're just, you know, some things are twisted in their brain. And there was, like, a collective effort to, like, kind of keep them from dying. Not because anyone liked them, but because it was, like, a group obligation of... Yeah, there's that one idiot in town who's, like, in his 30s and still can't, like, keep a job. And, like, we're gonna vaguely take care of him. And we're not gonna, like, pamper him. And that doesn't mean that that actually really happened that much. But that's definitely a thing we have in, like, media now.
Yeah, no, it's there.
And it's got that vibe where it's, like, it seems like everyone in this story is aware that Marv is a fucking loser and a piece of crap. But they will... engage with him in some aspects where it's like I don't remember the name of the bar, but the bar that he goes to where it's like he basically acts as security even though he doesn't even work there.
Katie's or whatever.
Something like that. And like they clearly know that he's a piece of crap, but like he's their piece of crap, you know? Or it's like he just goes and they just give him drinks for free, and if someone is being weird, he'll just beat the shit out of them because he's there.
Sort of the bouncer.
Kind of. Like it just the different basically just all the women in his life, in those, like, dynamics, it really, I think it's drawing attention to it. I'm just not 100% sure that Frank Miller has enough writing nuance to kind of, like, really get into it, but I feel like he was aware of something going on there.
He had the scent. There was, like, something there.
Yeah.
You know, he knew, like, he probably didn't know, like, the specific words or the specific names, but he's seen it or felt it in his own life.
Right, it feels
like
very
the atmosphere
possible.
Of it.
Yeah.
So he probably put it in there because he probably experienced some form of that.
Right, it definitely feels personal, even though it's a big, crazy noir story with a guy who's just absolute madman, but it definitely has a lot more of a personal touch to it.
Or maybe it's something to do with his dad, because that's usually what it is.
That too.
Usually artists' dads are, like, these big, burly dudes that just, like, work all the time.
Yeah.
It's like, argh.
And it's just, I think in terms of the story, that's the thing that I appreciate the most, is because Frank Miller is one of those guys that is so up and down in terms of, one, quality, and two, frankly, mental state. Like, he is one of the most public, like, comic figures of, like, he'll go on massive swings. I mean, he was, like, a huge authoritarian in the 2000s, and now he's, like, really left. Like, he's all over the place. And it's a really clear thing in his book where he's at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I like this one, is because it hits this really nice, like, homeostasis in the middle of, like, these are things that I think are cringe, and these are things I see in myself that I think are bad, and I want to make a cool book, but I can use these to make the book cool and, like, kind of address my bullshit. But it's not... It doesn't feel like, oh, you know, woe is me memoir. It just feels like... Himbo.
Yeah. So I would give this a 4 out of 7, honestly.
Mine's higher than that, but okay.
Well, yeah, because you just relate to it more. Like you, like,
damn, is he calling me an incel?
That's literally what you just said. You relate to it more. There's some things that I see that I can relate to as well, obviously. I think a lot of men can just relate to being a piece of shit. I give it the high number because I really love the art.
Yeah.
And I love it just being black and white, because I actually do love black and white comics. And also, thank God he died at the end. I mean, it sucks because he did get rid of everything, but there's no evidence for anything.
Yeah.
He didn't plan anything. It was just him going to kill someone, and that he was fine with that. So I'm like, yeah, I mean... There's probably no place for you in Earth
now,
like, ever.
I think that's one of the things that the rest of the books do. I can't confirm that because I haven't read all of them, but I think that's a very common theme, is, like, a lot of these main characters are, like, lunatics, and it's, like, they have a lot of understandable frustrations that they take out in really bad and mostly horrible ways that, like, there is no place for this.
Mm-hmm.
And even though Sin City is the worst place on the planet, you know, it's a Gotham without a Batman type shit, you know? It's always on fire. Chicago, you know.
Well, Colin just put me in a rough spot, because this is my third time reading it, and I think I enjoy it less and less every time I read it.
Really?
This last time was a struggle to read through. Maybe just because I know where it goes, and it It was, this read-through was much longer than I remembered. I didn't remember it being such a big book. I thought it was just like, someone killed my Goldie, I'm gonna hunt him down, and like, four issues maybe. But no, it goes on for quite a while.
It definitely feels a bit lengthy.
Yeah.
I actually don't feel like it's that lengthy. I feel like it fits for what it's trying to
tell. I mean, he
does
on like multiple,
go for too long.
Give me the name, and then he gets the name, and he's like, give me the other name! He does it multiple times.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just like, it's interesting to look at. All right, yeah. It's like a painting where it's like a really popular painting. It's probably pretty expensive. It's interesting to look at once or twice, but I wouldn't hang it on my wall.
That's fair.
Fair.
Yeah, I get that.
Fair.
I think, I believe Frank had described this book as, like, when he was writing it, it kind of got away from him. Like, what he said, I think he
said... In the back of the book, he said that it was supposed to be, like, a 48-page comic.
Yeah,
and
then just
Marv just beat him up and took over.
Yeah, which definitely makes sense. I definitely got that.
That happens
with the first
character.
I kind of feel that with, like, him needing his medicine kind of comes in the back end, and he degrades, he degenerates.
Declines.
He definitely, it seems like Frank liked that idea and ramped it up quickly on the back half of the book.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely get that. I think the first few pages definitely took me a little bit to get into. I like the hook of the story. It is a very been here, done that noir story. It's like, oh wow, I'm getting framed for murder of a prostitute. Like that's, we've seen that 1,000 times. But I think after the first few pages, it might just be because it's been a while since I've read a Frank Miller book and one that has any quality to it. So I had to get, like, back in the right mental state. But, like, even though he's just writing just so much dramatic voiceover, I could not help but get engrossed in it. Like, after the first bit, I was like, oh, come on, it needs to get going, it's boring. And then I just, like, the dial got turned up, and I was like, oh, never mind, I'm into this.
I was actually having so much fun reading this. As much as my score is, like, where my stars are low for this.
Yeah.
But, like, I had so much fun with reading the really long dialogues in the open with
it's
the giant panel, because it's so pretty just to see the giant panel and then
back,
you see
all it brought me back to Spawn. Spawn did that a lot.
See, I like stuff like that too. I mean, everyone now and again, like a short book, like like that.
Yeah.
I will not read a full series of something like that.
It's horrible.
But like,
it helps to get the exposition out of the way so that there can be action later.
Yeah, but it's also just, I don't know, there's something about it that just
aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, it is. Especially how he has it laid out, so it's not like boop, boop, block, up, top, left, top, right, blah, blah, blah. It's like all in one line.
He arranges a lot. I mean, that's what he does in most of his books. He aligns either the text is like left or right of frame, or it's almost placed like a panel.
So it's not obscuring the art.
That's the thing that I really, really like, is when Frank Miller, when he does his own lettering, I'm a really big fan of it. Even though a lot of, his writing can get very repetitive, and he is aware that he is up his own ass and very dramatic and a bit much. But when the book nails it, and it's like, it gets into a nice ebb and flow of dialogue and schizophrenic weirdo running on rooftops, it's like, you know what, I can jive with
this. Him running on rooftops, I was like, what the fuck.
He's
is
just doing his best Daredevil impression.
So that's another gripe I have with the book, is him running on rooftops.
Really?
I think it's really dumb. I would actually think it was way cooler if you saw him doing, like, Blade Runner shit.
Oh my
like,
god.
Walking around in the rain. Yeah, and the trench coat.
He does that towards the end of the book a little
bit. But, like, I want more than that. I like stuff like that. Like, him running on rooftops, like, this doesn't fit.
I think that definitely feeds into the schizo element. It's like, damn, bro, are you okay? You're like,
I have a positive and a negative. I like Kevin the Cannibal a lot. I think that's really cool. And he's got a dog that he feeds, like, the human bits he doesn't want to eat. I like all that stuff. That's a cool
especially thing. Especially since he never screamed when he's being cut up. Like,
so weird.
I was like, what the fuck? That actually genuinely surprised me.
And there's a fart joke mixed in where Marv describes Kevin as silent but deadly Kevin. I was like, come on, really? What? When he is discovered to have been the one that killed Goldie, there's no
explanation
method.
Yeah,
no.
Described, it's just Goldie's dead, and it's like, but how?
That's
never
because,
explained.
Because there's no gunshot, there's no cutting.
Yeah,
that is
not
annoying.
A heart attack.
There's
like,
no bruising.
No.
Like nothing.
I think, don't quote me, I think some of that might be explored later in other books, because there's a lot of world building that happens in the other books that is like recontextualizes a lot of
stuff.
Fuck, I guess
I'm reading all of them.
Like I said, at least a few of them I know are pretty solid, but like I think. that there's a bit, I don't know about that specific, I feel like there's more picture there, but you are right. Like, there is, that's part of the premise is, like, there's no marks, there's no choking, she's just dead. So it's like, what the fuck? And then it doesn't get explained, because he goes on his rampage mm-hmm. to, you know, murder the little bishop boy.
I really like the way that was made. I don't understand. Yeah.
It's so
hard. It was probably a black page and he did white?
Probably not.
Really?
So what you can do is... Pencil, so what you do outline? Is you take your pencil, you draw your whole picture.
Yeah.
Like, exactly how you see it.
And then just sharpen the shadow.
There's that too, but what you can do is you can take, like, your line art and make the lines and be like, oh, this is going to be... This hair, even though it's all black right here, I'm going to make the outline of that so I know that that's going to be white. And there's going to be X's in here to make it black. And then all the shading that's there, you just draw over them.
There's so many different ways you can do it.
There's really also cool. What you can do is just you take white and you just draw all your black shadows. And you take your white ink or your white gel pen or whatever. And you go... Find all the lines.
That is exactly how Colin does all his art.
That is exactly, yeah. I hold it like my pen, like like a fist, like.
He's like, it's like he's putting ketchup on a hot dog.
Yeah. Imagine if that's how I drew. That'd be so fucked up.
No, that's exactly how you draw. What are you talking about?
Oh yeah, that is.
That's how he does it.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite Frank Miller books.
I will actually buy this book.
There's definitely a lot of flaws. I do want to follow up on the other books, because I think it's been like 5 or 6 years since I read this one. I'm definitely interested in at least a few of the other ones. If it like tanks, then I'll drop it. But they're also pretty inexpensive, and I really like the format of these. They're a lot thicker than they need to be, because each page is like cardstock.
It's printed like a Hellboy book.
Yes. I really like how well it holds.
I think that's the first time I've seen it like that. I think... The older printings were, like, shorter.
Huh.
It's really
weird.
Yeah.
I have
no clue.
I like the material of this book.
I think it works.
This book is, like, manufactured, I love.
I think it works well with the black and white. It's a very tight binding. It's a very tight binding.
It's very white.
The pages are very thick.
That's what makes it very white.
It's very cool for that.
You picked it up for $25?
Yeah. It seems reasonable enough for that. It is definitely, I wouldn't say premium formatting, but, like, this is, like, if I could pick one way for books to be printed, this would be very high on that list.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, it has a matte cover for the most part, and then, like, the pages are so dummy thick. I don't necessarily like the thick pages, but when it's got this...
The white cardstock is perfect for the black and white artwork.
Exactly. And because it's all white pages, it really helps frame it. So it's putting black ink on white paper instead of, you know, they print, like, these books.
Yes.
Where it's like, there's so much black in there, but like that's all ink on top of the paper.
Yes.
And it's like that just, it's ineffective. It just, this feels timeless, you know? Hot.
Yes.
Speaking of timeless, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
We have Secret Invasion?
Timeless?
I don't know. I was stretching for a segue.
What? So, yeah, Marvel's Secret
Invasion.
Are
you saying Secret Invasion is a tight fart?
I didn't watch it.
Of course.
Because, hear me out, one day he was over, I was going to watch it, and then our Disney Plus was...
Oh, no.
And so then, I never went to check back to see if he got our Disney Plus back up.
Wow, I did.
Okay. Yeah, and also I didn't get a text. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I'm not going to ask about his financial state because he's probably going to cry about it. I'm probably going to put him into a manic crying session. I don't want that.
I love manic crying sessions. Okay, plug your ears then. So we watched the first 2 episodes of 6. They've been releasing weekly on Wednesdays. I think it was Kenobi started with the Wednesdays thing for Disney Plus shows. And
yeah,
I've been liking
that sounds right.
I like the Wednesdays for the... Not Mandalorian.
I want to defend myself. The first episode was rough, I think, because it's very slow, which is fine. I can watch slow media, but it also felt predictable and basic. There are really long shots. Like, the opening 10 minutes, Nick Fury comes down from S.W.O.R.D., and it's a really cool transition with the lights and stuff.
He gets dropped out of a UFO's butthole.
Yes! But then he's just standing in a field waiting to be picked up. And there's just long, long shots of him trying to walk with shitty knees. And finally someone pulls up and says, hey, get in the car. And they hug. And he says, it's good to see you. And it just holds it. It's like, what are we looking at? What is happening right now? Spencer's gonna tell me that it's very important for, like, emotional beats, and it's, oh, it's so nice that they get to see each other again. It's been so long, but it gets to be, there's so many of those. It's like, why wasn't this trimmed up? It's very long. It's very distracting. It's like, you're supposed to be looking for something, and there's nothing there.
I don't disagree with you at all, actually. I like making fun of you for having Zoomer brain, because it's very funny, because we make fun of Colin for constantly being... He goes on TikTok to take a pee.
I'm sure you have movies that these long, dramatic shots are important. Let's say Dune does it, and there's something there. It's for a reason. But this show doesn't have a reason. It's just long shots. It feels poorly edited.
I actually agree with you. Especially after the second episode, where I think it's alleviated a bit. I do like this show so far.
Yes.
I have qualms, and my biggest qualm, especially because I was really looking forward to this, is I don't know if either the crew behind the scenes or if Marvel is letting this go quite as... It just feels like they don't quite have enough meat to back up the style they're trying to give it, if that makes any sense. Like, they are, they specifically came out and said, all the episodes are an hour. They did that well ahead of release. They said, everything's an hour. And it's like, on the one hand, I don't like that a lot of the Disney Plus shows from either Lucasfilm or Marvel have been
limited.
Very, the times are all over the place. You'll have a 55-minute episode, and then, like, the Mandalorian finale is, like, 37. I don't like that. I like that they're willing to just let the episode be what the episode is, but sometimes it really does feel like they're trying to cram stuff in. And yes. I like that this was like, you have the full hour, all six episodes are directed by the same person, which I like, so they have a more continuous like style to it, which is nice. But it doesn't quite feel, I am willing to suspend my disbelief to, you know, fill the suspense void and figure out what's going on here. But I have a feeling when it's over, I'm going to have a similar feeling as I did with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, whereas I liked a lot of the stuff in that show, but because of the artistic restrictions given towards the finale in terms of wrapping up arcs and stuff and them ham-fisting in seeds of other things, I feel like it really, really hampered that show. And also the politics of that show are fucked.
The timing thing doesn't bother me. I would rather a well-edited, a good-looking, you know, tight-knit story over a half hour or an hour and a half, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Then you have 1 hour, fill it with padding or trim it down as needed.
Yeah.
That shit bothers me.
I agree with you. It is just frustrating because it's like, I like the sentiment, but I don't think it's really panning out that well in that front, because like, I like a lot of the shots. I think the show for the most part looks pretty good, especially for the, I'm not going to use the word grounded because that would be stupid, but the very more, they want it to be a spy espionage show, which I like because that's very out of left field. Marvel sucks at that, frankly. We haven't had that sort of stuff in ages.
But also,
not having any superheroes there makes it very different, but also makes it a lot lower energy.
It's disappointing, though, because in the second episode, they're like, well, should we call the Avengers? And it's like, no. But it's like, those guys could be Skrulls, too. Like, if this... This feels very comparable to Winter Soldier, Falcon and Winter Soldier, because it feels like it should have been bigger than it was, but no, they just have a small cell of not terrorists or whatever.
So I actually disagree with you on that one. That's the point. Part of the thing with this show that I wanted was when they said, we're not doing a big event movie thing, we're making a short TV show about this, because... It might just be a me thing. I do like Secret Invasion in the comics. It's very fun. I don't get that much out of the, wow, look, the superhero you love is actually an alien. Like, it just doesn't do that much for me. I would rather this be a, who does Nick Fury trust? Nick Fury is off his A game, and who should he be trusting in his life? That is way more interesting to me. And, like, in the second episode, the teasers for they're making a Super Skrull, obviously, they're not connected to other heroes directly, which I appreciate, even though clearly that's a restriction because they didn't have the Fantastic Four yet to do that. Like, I would prefer that because it keeps it more contained to itself. It's about Nick Fury, his allies, and his enemies, but I don't think that they're balancing it very well.
It just feels like weird politics of, like, we're trying to say a thing instead of anybody could be bad guy. It feels like a smaller scale twist on the concept.
Yes, it does. And it is one of the things that is more appealing to me intellectually but I don't think it's playing out super great on that front. There's parts of it that definitely have that. It's more like, we were talking about this with WandaVision, whereas despite the fact that we all really liked WandaVision, and almost all of those episodes were fantastic, except the finale, which sucked, like, the amount of speculation that they were clearly trying to make the internet do, and
yep.
none of it actually meant anything,
yep.
was one of the biggest letdowns of that show. Not just because, no Mephisto, but like...
Mephisto's confirmed.
Shut up. But like, that vibe of speculation, that's what this show should have, but it doesn't actually... I don't think that they're actually putting in the effort to make intentional choices and plant seeds. It feels more like they're kind of scattershotting weird stuff, and then they'll pull the twist out of their ass.
Like, in the first episode, you get Rhodey briefing the president, and it's like, but the president could be a Skrull, but the show, because it's just a small group of Skrulls in one location, that's most likely not going to happen.
Right. But because they did also throw some stuff in there that Rhodey might maybe be, which people have been speculating on for like 10 years now. So there's a lot of stuff in here that I do really like. But I do feel like by the end of it, I'm probably going to be disappointed. Because, like I said, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I think, was made a lot more structurally sound, like quality-wise, than the other shows were. But currently, it's at the bottom of my MCU show list because it really flopped on its politics making any sort of coherent sense. And this has a similar struggle of, like, how do we... Because the Skrulls were introduced differently in this universe than they were in the comics, which I did really like. That was one of the best parts of Captain Marvel, was framing them differently, and it is, you know... It's just more interesting. There's more nuance to it. But because of that retroactive framing, now they can't just be like, well, all the Skrulls are evil and they're going to take over the world. And it's like, you have to then justify why this cell of Skrulls is upset and all that stuff. And, like, it's interesting in concept, but they haven't pulled off enough personality yet to really make it interesting outside of kind of, like, I'm obliged to. Admittedly, Sam Jackson is having a fucking ball with this,
of
and I do love him. Him and Ben Mendelsohn really do have fantastic chemistry that I do think is kind of carrying the show right now.
I have more thoughts on the pilot.
PP.
I do like the feeling of it. I'd say the vibe of the first episode is very much like the first Mission Impossible movie.
Ooh.
Of like, cloak and dagger, I'm going to stand behind this corner and peek and watch this guy walk away.
True. I do love that show.
Like, that's a good feeling. I like that. There is a thing that happens at the end of the first episode that's made to supposedly make you go, oh no, that happened! But it's been so long
since we've seen that character.
We've seen anybody affected by it that's like, oh no, they finally pulled the trigger, literally.
Yeah.
And now we don't have that person anymore. Wow.
I will admit, I'm fine with that character being the one to bite the dust initially, but also it does smell like fridge. It smells like fridging to me.
It feels like Disney's been so uninterested with that character for so long, and they've been trying to get rid of them, and then they finally did it. It's like, wow, you finally put it out of its misery.
Yeah.
Good job.
The initial twist on the episode of the pilot, I knew was coming, and I still liked it. That first scene is really good.
Oh, yeah.
That was very nice.
I don't know.
I thought that helped make it
feel predictable.
I guess. I don't know. I was expecting that just because you need your initial twist, but, like, bitch went splat. I thought it was funny. I like Ross. He's funny. There's a couple of characters that I'm keeping my eyes on that I'm more interested in than... I don't know if it's warranted that I'm interested. I really like Olivia Colman. She's phenomenal. That's the British lady. I like her in a lot of other stuff. She's phenomenal. And
Game of Thrones.
Have we seen her from something in Marvel?
Nope, she's a new character.
We've seen her in Solo.
It kind of...
that's Star Wars.
No.
I'm talking Marvel. Like,
no.
It felt like an established character that Fury was seeing again, and I was like, who the heck is this? I don't understand.
We're not talking about her. We're talking about somebody else.
Elizabeth.
I'm talking about Olivia Colman.
We're not talking
British
Kira.
Oh, I'm
we're
sorry. I thought you said Elizabeth.
No. No. That's another one.
Bonk.
See, at least I'm not listening to the conversation.
I know.
I am! Typical.
I like the dynamic with Fury. She brings a very bizarre energy to it. There's plenty of speculation fuel there, which whatever. I don't know. She's got plenty of on-screen charisma. And in the second episode, she does do the gnarliest thing in the show, which was unexpectedly gruesome. I didn't, you know, not like I haven't seen that 1,000 times before in TV, but like on a, it was, you know.
I don't remember.
She got a guy's finger off in frame. Just went like ooh, in the frame. For a fucking Marvel property, bitch. Shut up. That's what gets you. That's like the thing that gets you an R rating.
Oh, that. All right.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm back on page now.
I like the dynamic between the personal drive of the show more than the plot. The Nick Fury is guilty because he didn't help the Skrulls like he said he was going to. And that makes a lot of them upset. Most of them justifiably so. There's a lot of personal drama there that I find really exciting. Because that was the best part of Captain Marvel was him and Ben Mendelsohn's Talos. Like, they have really interesting chemistry. Also, whatever accent he's doing is really funny. Like, I find Ben Mendelsohn doesn't talk like that normally. But, like, whatever voice he does for this character is really funny. And, like, just that, the personal family drama, that stuff is really cool. Even though, admittedly, it is moderately predictable.
I must piss in eight. I can't wait anymore.
Damn.
Ah. Colin.
Yeah, Bubble.
What did you do this week?
I finished the entirety of Game of Thrones.
Wow.
So, everyone knows what Game of Thrones is. I'm not going to explain what the fuck Game of Thrones is.
What's Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones
a
is...
A lot of cousins fucking...
A lot of incest, dragons, and medieval times, but not medieval times. Basically, a bunch of noblemen and lords are all, like, fucking around. They want to kill each other, and they all want to take this thing called the Iron Throne, which, like, rules the Seven Kingdoms. I only watched it because I wanted to watch the story of Jon Snow, the man I want to be, and Tyrion, the man I am. So, it's a great show, actually. I loved most of it, if not all. A lot of it, if not most. There we go. That one's better. The entire show is just basically what I just said. But Jon Snow's story arc is just great. It's just showing him trying to be a better person or just trying to be the man that he believes he should be. And eventually him being a good man gets him killed, but he needs to come back to life because blah, blah, blah. And I'm only going to really talk about my hot take.
I hate you.
The hot take is that season 8 isn't that bad. And then I watched the last two episodes of season 8, and I'm like, because how the fuck is Jon Snow back at Castle Black? And how the fuck is he part of the Night's Watch again? And how is he not king? That is so stupid.
Are you going to watch the prequel House of the Dragon?
I'm already on episode 1 right now.
Wow.
I already started it last night.
Wow.
Yep. I think that Daenerys Targaryen, it made sense, at least when they started writing her to be like a tyrannical weirdo in season 6. It makes sense where she ended up, but I think if they just extended season 8 to be a little bit longer, like normal, the normal amount of episodes, they could have gotten to a point where she could find reason and not become a lunatic like she did, because she has listened to reason in the past many, many a times from people that she trusted, and then she just stops listening to the people that she trusted because
she did indeed go Joker mode.
She did go Joker mode.
Dragon mommy.
Yeah, because her babies kept dying and shit like that, which hurt the dragons. But there's so much to the show, and I actually think there's a lot of dialogue that's pretty shit, but a lot of the stuff, at least with Jon Snow, was great. And Tyrion. Tyrion is a very smart man, and we're actually shown a lot of his problems and him trying to be better. They treat him like he's a terrible person, even though he's not even that bad, per se.
I think the rest of that sentence kind of contextualized that he's not actually a good person. He's not even that bad, really. Like, he's above the floor, but that's because everyone in this show is a monster. The world is fucked.
Okay, so what did he even do that was really bad? Except for... They treated him bad. In season 8, I can only really think of the bad, quote-unquote bad thing he did was he was trying to follow his queen because he wholeheartedly believed in her. And he sold out his friend because he believed that he was going to ruin her reign.
Sounds like bottom behavior to me.
It is bottom behavior, which was stupid. I don't feel like Tyrion would have done that.
That's what everyone feels about the last couple of seasons in general, is why did they make that choice? That doesn't make sense.
Jon Snow, everything he's ever done made sense until season 8, where he was just standing by and watching Daenerys do her thing.
Did you see the Starbucks cup?
The Starbucks cup.
What Starbucks cup?
They made a goof. I think it was in like season 5 or 6, and it was something that happened a lot. They'd accidentally leave like Starbucks cups like on set, and then they'd just be in the shot, and they didn't fix it afterwards.
Oh yeah, I didn't see any of those. I was actually looking for them sometimes, but I was so engrossed into the story I didn't care.
And then sometimes
I know that there's like planes in the background or whatever, but yeah. Like I didn't care. CGI was obviously not the greatest when it came to dragons and stuff like that. And then I saw, like, sometimes Dothraki hordes, like, if they got them close up, they were, like, super CG. I'm like, whoa, that's kind of weird. At least in season, like, 7 or something like that, when they actually came to Westeros.
When they came.
Yes. Finally. They did come.
It took them a long time to come.
It did, actually.
Winter was edging for a very long time.
Winter was edging for a long time. I love the Starks. Everything to do with them is great. Oh, my word. Greyjoy. Theon Greyjoy was fucking awful. And then seeing... Even though... this show showed me how my morals work and how... what I definitely believe is terrible and what is not. With, like, Theon, because, like, he did all these bad things, but then he was just tortured relentlessly for, like, who knows how long, like, months. And he got his dick chopped off and certain parts. Certain torture methods I didn't ever imagine to think of. I saw him, like, I never thought of that. That's really fucked. Like, cutting, like, around your, like, finger and just, like, peeling that muscle off. I'm like, oh, I never imagined anything like that.
I'm so glad that you're not a psychopath.
This is a kid-friendly show.
It is.
No, it's not.
We
talk about dicks. It's not a kid-friendly show.
So as much as there is to, like, complain and to make fun of, I still love the show. Because I loved watching John be the type of person that I wanted to be.
I think he's got a man crush.
And, no, I just love John. Jon Snow. Or, Aegon Targaryen.
But I just love him. Yeah, I do. You have
him.
A dude crush.
Speaking of royalty.
Also his real life wife, who played his first love in the show, hot.
I'm so happy for you.
Yes. Speaking of royalty and incest.
Yes.
I read Wonder Woman Historia, The Amazons, the latest Black Label book from DC.
Holy shit, Black Label.
There is no actual incest in this, but it is all of the, like, ancient god mythology of Zeus and all those guys.
Gay.
And
if there was no Zeus, there'd be nothing. He just had to stick his dick in everything.
Yes. This is kind of like the Silmarillion for Wonder Woman history. So it goes way, way, way back to the beginning of time, and it shows a lot of gods, like formless gods and goddesses, and it shows the creation of Themyscira and the politics of that. And
beans. I love beans.
It's no, not like that. But like the goddesses are like, fuck you. We don't have dicks, and we want to be separate. So,
it looks pretty.
It does look pretty. It's kudos to the creative team for being able to illustrate gods and goddesses in their heavens and like concepts in a comic book. Like, there's a lot of things going on here that would be really hard to illustrate, and they did really well, and that was cool. I wasn't really interested in the story. I was kind of bored.
Oof.
How are the boobas?
I'm sure Spencer will enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, the pages are already sticky, buddy.
Because of his feminist agenda?
I do have a feminist agenda. I'm going to get that t-shirt someday. Do you not remember when that happened, Colin?
No, but I feel like you're one of the most misogynistic men I've met.
I know.
I actually saw the comic book that poster is based on in the store, and I almost got it for you.
No. Oh, that's rare to get you. It's hard to get a hold of that thing. That was, like,
really?
The biggest hubbub in, like, 2014 or whatever the fuck that
it's
was.
It's at Stairway on display.
Oh! Know where I'm going.
Yeah, the story's fine. The back of the book has, like, the script or the pitch idea or whatever you want to call it, and it's kind of funny because there's, like, a full page and a half talking about what was going to happen in what became this book, and then there's like a paragraph or two of what's going to happen in book 2 and 3, and most of it's redacted, which is really funny. I have no idea where it's going to go. They leave themselves plenty of space to go and make more books, but this book is nicely closed out, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm not on a cliffhanger, like, just waiting with bated breath to find out what happens next. This is a nice book to have and read and enjoy.
How does it, roughly, what seems to be a roughly comparable book was The Other History of the DC Universe. Kind of. How do they compare? Because that was the thing that jumped to my mind when I was looking at this, when it got, like, announced.
Other History of the DC Universe is a legit-ass book that someone drew pictures over the words. You can still read the words, but there's, like, crayon drawings in the space at the edge of the page. This is more like a comic book. There are nice pictures on display, and it looks really good, but it kind of reads like the Silmarillion, honestly. It's like ethereal, I guess.
Wacky. How much you buy, where you buy?
$30 at Stairway to Heaven Comics in Newington. You're probably going to take this home with you today, because I'm not going to reread for a very long time.
It looks kind of like a coffee table book. A little bit.
It looks good. It's interesting.
I love that cover. She got peacock feathers.
It took forever for this to get collected into a hardcover.
Yeah.
The single issue sat on the shelf for so long, and I thought for sure DC just forgot about it.
Yeah, they've been having some difficulties with a lot of their Black Label stuff lately. A lot of stuff got pushed for unknown reasons. I think they were switching distributors or some other junk.
There's one goddess that is not dressed.
Oh!
And it's shown like 2 or 3 times. And then that's it. This really could have easily been E for Everybody book. Or maybe like PG. But
weird.
Like,
that's,
yeah,
cool.
It's really weird.
Huh. Strange.
Very, very strange.
Speaking of strange,
I think I gave it a 3 out of 5 on Goodreads. Maybe 2. I don't know, somewhere in there. Speaking of strange,
I read a Doctor Strange book again.
Yet again,
I'm on a huge kick. I read Doctor Strange, The Flight of Bones. It is written... Shut up, bitch. It was a multifaceted endeavor from a bunch of different people. Let me pull up the credentials. Basically, it seemed like it was 3 or 4 friends that were in Marvel Publishing, and they shared writing and, like, editorial control, and then some of them did the art and some of them did the inks. It includes Dan Jolly, Mike Carey, Marcos Martin, and a couple of other people that I'm very not familiar with the team on this book. This was a 4-issue Marvel Knight miniseries in 1999, and it also includes some assorted other appearances from Doctor Strange during that time, mostly in other Marvel Knight properties. So, like, some random short story he was in the back of a Daredevil book or whatever. The Marvel Knights imprint was an in-continuity excuse for Marvel to have their edgy, dark characters to be a little extra dark and edgy. Daredevil and Punisher were very big in this imprint, and Doctor Strange seemed a little bit out of left field, and in the sense of making it extra dark and edgy, this book really doesn't do that, which is kind of disappointing. So this was the first Doctor Strange Marvel Knights book, and it just... Basically, the fucking... He has a friend who's another sorcerer person. She's like a street magician or whatever, and she gets corrupted by an evil organization who are being commanded by three babies, but the three babies are one person, they're one demon, and that demon is Dormammu.
Are we Dormammu?
An eagle organization.
Yeah.
I love that.
I like birds. I am the biggest bird. It's a really weird story. It's about like it's super weird. I really don't like the story. The fact that it's, of course, the twist villain that's actually Dormammu was expected, because that's almost every Doctor Strange book is like, Lamau, it was actually Dormammu. I am your biggest enemy. I am a surgeon, Dr. Han. I am detergent. I am Dr. Han. That's nice. Dormammu is simultaneously one of the most powerful beings in the Marvel Universe and also the biggest dork. It's really funny, especially during this time period. Every time Doctor Strange kicks his ass, sends him back to hell or the dark dimension or whatever. And that's what this turned into. And I'm really disappointed by it. The cover is fucking gorgeous. And all of the alternate covers that are included are also very pretty. They're very painted, which is very nice. The internal art is all fine.
Hot.
The internal stuff is fine. When I was reading it, I couldn't shake the feeling of... it was a Swamp Thing book that I talked about maybe a year ago, where Len Wein, it was like the last Len Wein story he did before he passed, and the art was done by, I can't remember who it was, but I had described it as very like old school, but like not in a good way. Like it felt very stuck in the past, and for this being made in the late 90s, it really felt like it was made in the 70s. The dialogue was very heavy-handed like that. And, of course, some stories, it's nice to have that really retro feel to it. I still like reading, you know, Ditko and Lee and Kirby books. But this was pretty rough. I bought it for $9 on Amazon. But I actually bought it from Jetpack through Amazon, which is the funnier part. I didn't realize I bought it from Jetpack until I got the order. And then I looked at the receipt and I was like, oh, shit. I could have just picked up the book, which is funny. So price-wise, it was fine. It's a more recent printing, which is really odd. I haven't seen it in stores because it's such an older book. It's just really kind of disappointing because, like, the premise is okay and some of the dialogue is fine. The magic looks really nice. And Strange himself, the cloak do be looking great. And there's some panels where, like, the cloak will be in multiple panels, which I think is really nice.
That's what I'm having, too. It was just, like, a sudden rush of, I gotta shit right now. Go ahead. Wrap it up.
Oh, God. Okay. There's a couple of cool panels where, you know, Doctor Strange is walking out a door or whatever, and then the panel adjacent to it will be, like, the tail of the cloak still in the door or whatever. There's cute little elements like that, which I thought are nice. It just, the whole thing feels really... It feels like a passion project between friends, which is cool, and I think that's a good thing, but it didn't turn out super well quality-wise. It's one of the weakest Doctor Strange stories I've read.
That sucks.
Buying it for $9 admittedly makes me not very upset about it. It was just kind of disappointing. I might flip through it again because there were some panels that were kind of interesting, and it's nice to have, like, you know, all the stuff. And because it was Marvel Knights was such a weird time period for Marvel Comics, I find them all interesting, even though a lot of them were not even that good. So I'm glad I didn't buy it for more. I don't plan on really reading it again, like, properly.
Batman.
We're doing a second one.
Yeah, I thought we were... See, I told you.
I would like not to. I know it's the rule, but I don't remember what happened in these books.
Gay and or cringe. Penis. You know who is gay and cringe?
Our patrons.
Jeff Lorenz and Caitlin are weird and bizarre, and they give us money, which is cool. And appreciate
a lot of money. Caitlin upped theirs.
Yes. Thank you for the money. We like it. We're going to go... buy stickers or something with it. Temporary Batman tattoos.
No.
Yes.
I have temporary Hellboy tattoos hidden around here somewhere.
Really?
I've meant to throw them at Colin. I was mad because I thought they were stickers. I was at Jetpack for Hellboy Day, and I thought they were stickers, and I got home. I was like, oh, come on. Temporary tattoos. This is dumb. I want stickers.
Interesting.
How much embarrassment did you, like, feel after you got home, like, thinking about, did they really think I meant to buy temporary tattoos as a grown-ass adult?
No, it was in the free pile of stuff. There was a huge pile of stuff.
I think temporary tattoos are cool.
If I bought one and not realizing what it was and everyone thought I was doing it on purpose, I would have felt so much embarrassment after the fact.
Nah, I didn't care. Also, I got this wicked cool, like, window cling thing that I have on the window of my turntable. It's really cool.
Do not kill the cringe part of you. Kill the part of you that cringes. Be free, my friend.
Oh, my gosh.
Back to our patrons. They are super cool.
Yes.
Caitlin upstairs, and they're going to get, like, a happy hour interview because that's what happens to people who up their subscription
on
Patreon.
At our highest tier, you can get invited on to a happy hour segment, which we'll be doing next week, most likely. We'll be in touch about that. If you want to help financially support us and go to our Patreon, it's at patreon.com/DimeComicBrosNetwork. We have a bunch of different cool tiers, stickers, bookmarks, exclusive segments like Happy Hour, which we do after every podcast where we have a beer, do some shenanigans, and be dumb.
Ooga booga.
Ooga booga. Yeah, lots of ooga booga noises. As well as early access to all of our podcasts and other endeavors on this collective effort of stuff, whatever the fuck this is that we do. A shout out to our partners over at Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire, over at the Megastore, where Jacob was for Hellboy Day. You can get temporary tattoos, apparently. I didn't know about that. Stickers, comics, books,
manga,
board games, weeb shit, all the stuff.
Fake swords.
They got fake swords. All sorts of crazy stuff. It's the most nerd store. So they support us. We like them. In the next couple of days, actually, we are going to be going on the annual Jetpack Booze Cruise. It's for Jetpack employees, friends, and open to the public. So that'll be fun. We get to go vibe and hang out and harass people to give us books or whatever. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram for updates, teasers, blah, blah, behind-the-scenes stuff. We also have a Substack, which is linked in the description of all of our episodes, where Jacob and I, mostly Jacob, puts together a visual aid and synopsis of our episode to go along with it that gets emailed out for free to everyone.
Also, fuck Google Keyboard, because every single time I type Substack, it says substance. So this week's substance is done, is finished. This week's substance is finished, and I really am sick of it.
He's very upsetty spaghetti. If you want to make Jacob less upsetty spaghetti, you should follow our Substack. It's very cool and appreciated. Next week, we got a butt ton of news because we've had a bit of a break for the last week and a half-ish. There's a lot of shenanigans. And we got a bunch of... Oh my god, true. and we'll have another episode of Secret Invasion and stuff. And Colin will be prepared to talk about the Skrullussy.
Three episodes. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
My leg.
Come again.
Penis.
That looks good.
Penis.
Penis.
I'm just laughing because he's talking about, you know, they've just been spewing it out and then pulling this thing out of their ass.